Hello again. This is RTE's Your Politics podcast, the weekly podcast on all things political from the RTE team here at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler and I'm joined today by my colleagues Joe McGraelig and Fiacra O'Kioni. And it's been the day, Joe, of Pascal Donoghue's final Doyle speech. And appropriately enough for a man who's known to like reading, what was his final theme?
Yeah, his final theme was a request to the new Minister for Finance to continue with investment in libraries. Pascal Donoghue, as we all know, has a great interest in reading. He reviews books on a regular basis, and he has been a supporter of public libraries throughout his career. He described libraries as fantastic spaces. He said it's a place where you can find it. There are places where you can find solitude and community at the same time. And he said we should be very proud of the fact that in Ireland we value places where people read, that we value the service that libraries give to the community. And I thought it was a great way to finish. It was a humble enough way, really, considering, you know, he's going off to be the second in command of the World Bank in Washington. But this was what he finished on. And it was actually funny, the Taoiseach replied, and there were guffaws in the chamber when he said, I never thought that Pascal Donoghue would be telling me to spend more money rather than the opposite, which Pascal Donoghue, known as Prudent Pascal, has been saying for years and years and years throughout the time he was as minister.
Mm. And Fiacra, Pascal Donoghue got an unusually warm goodbye, didn't he? Even from those, you know, who would normally, even Piers Doherty, who would normally disagree with him on everything under the sun.
He did. I think myself and Joe almost lost track of how many times opposition parties and opposition finance people said, well, you know, I disagreed with you on policy, but I wish you well. And I think that's probably a fair reflection on how people maybe see Pascal Donoghue in politics. That obviously he has to say some controversial things and has done some, had some controversial policies in the past that people may disagree with or agree with. But on a personal level, he always has been quite personable. I do think, though, there is a big maybe question from a lot of people of the fact that, you know, he's going, his new role is now going to be Chief Knowledge Officer. And I think there is an irony that Pascal Donoghue, kind of known as somebody who knows everything, but nobody's quite sure what Chief Knowledge Officer means. We know it comes with a very big salary. So he might be going off to spend more time in a library, Joe, in solitude, but he's also going to spend time with a significantly increased salary in his future role.
But Joe, you know the way that old adage, every political career ends in failure. It is rare to see someone choose to walk off the stage, to walk off the stage to such warm applause, and then to go off to a great big job in the World Bank.
Yeah.
I mean, the new Peter Sutherland, perhaps.
Yeah, I suppose it's not as rare as it used to be, though. I mean, yeah, we used to say they all end in failure, but I mean, we saw Leo Varadkar, he walked off the stage. He said, you give until you can give no more, and that's what that was his decision then to leave. Pascal Donoghue, I think, I mean, it's not a secret that he has been looking at these type of positions, because we know he's been head of the Euro group. We know that he's been walking on the world stage in terms of finance, involved with the IMF, the World Bank. He's been at that level for a long time, and there's been speculation that he was going to get one of these jobs over the last couple of years. And of course, we learned from his chat with David McCullough the other morning that he actually wasn't thinking, he was thinking he wasn't going to stand in the 2024 general election either. He was thinking that his career was already finishing in domestic politics, but he did in the end, he said, because of the changes that had happened. Leo Varadkar left, Simon Harris came in, and really I suppose his duty to Simon Harris, he decided he would stand. So look, it's certainly not, he's certainly going on his own terms, that's for sure. But as I say, it's not as rare as it used to be. Mm. I mean, we've seen it in other countries as well. We've seen it with Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand. We've seen it in various other places as well.
But what we've actually had is a particular impact, haven't we, in you know, the recent past in Fine Gael. Pascal Donoghue, Leo Varadkar, Simon Coveney. I mean, they were the big beasts, and you know, relatively young men as well, who would have, many people would have presumed would be, you know, playing leadership roles in Fine Gael into the future. So I'm wondering, Fiacra, there's the winners and who got promoted this week, but I'm wondering about the impact on Fine Gael and the impact on the coalition.
Yeah, there is undoubtedly going to be an impact on Fine Gael. Just when Joe was mentioning Pascal Donoghue last year in 2024's general election, literally about this time last year, Fine Gael basically broke the, in case of emergency, break the Pascal Donoghue glass and got him out to try and drag them over the line back into power. And Pascal Donoghue, I remember a doorstep he was at about this time last year where he said, you know, he knows there was rumours about would he like a big financial job, which he's now in, but he couldn't possibly have left Simon Harrison, and someone has brought us through our darkest hours. And it was almost a kind of Churchill kind of statement from Pascal Donoghue. So he was that kind of guy for Fine Gael, a safe pair of hands, but also someone that maybe Fine Gael voters would trust. Fine Gael does now have
and
a potential...
And someone who gave a kind of a gravitas. I mean, the politician who argued the philosophy of the centre, defended the centre, had a very close working relationship, unusually for a Fine Gael minister, with his counterparts Michael McGrath and subsequently Jack Chambers. So can Simon Harris keep all the, you know, connections there as smoothly as Pascal Donoghue did?
Well, that is going to be the big question, because there is now, whether Fine Gael admits it or not, a kind of long-term gap for them. Now, obviously, Simon Harris is there. Simon Harris, one of his arguments was for becoming finance minister, for appointing himself finance minister, was because he's the longest serving minister now for Fine Gael. But that in itself tells a story that Fine Gael has lost, you could argue, almost a generation of people, near enough, who have all left the field in the past year and a half. That does lead to potential problems within Fine Gael, and within Fianna Fáil then, that also leads to a potential imbalance maybe in the always best of friends coalition partners. Maybe Fianna Fáil might see an opportunity to exert more control on the coalition.
And what happens on you if Simon Harris turns around and says, I've given it my all now for 10 or 12 or 14
Joe,
long years.
I think the chances of that are quite slim. I wouldn't take that one to the bookies, put it that way.
I do wonder.
But you never know.
I do wonder because, I mean, as a performer, he has been, you know, as a Taoiseach and as a Taoiseach and as a Fine Gael leader, he has really, really, really been giving it his all. From early morning until late at night, you're still hearing from the Taoiseach and from his people. So, like others, the day might come. We'll just have to see.
In the meantime, the big question is, because he's the leader of Fine Gael, and you know, so leader of your party as well as Minister for Finance. So all this prudent Pascal, and Pascal had the eye on the wider balancing the macroeconomic with the political. Again, you're wondering, will Simon Harris be a bit more tempted to be politically partisan in that job?
I would think that is something that's maybe on a lot of people's minds at the moment. Pascal Donoghue would almost irritatingly, for journalists, you could nearly ask him anything and he would say thank you for the question and then not give any kind of answer of any use for us. So he'd be very careful. Simon Harris, I think, is maybe a different element on this, that he's very quick in lots of positive ways as well with knowing how to use a broadcast clip or to give a particular quote. Sometimes in finance, that's maybe not the best way to go. So he's going to have to balance maybe his natural inclination as a politician with the job that he has now given himself, which is a very serious job going into potentially troubled waters into the future.
You see, I think Pascal was very like a submarine, really. He operated quietly in the Department of Finance, and he surfaced every now and again when there was a budget, when there was some big economic figures or fiscal reports or something like that. But he operated on that level and he was able to do that within the Department of Finance. And it was the same with Michael Noonan to an extent before him, if you think back. So now the Taoiseach, who is Taoiseach, he's the second in command in government. He's the leader of his party. He's also now the Minister for Finance. So one would have thought that he wouldn't be able to continue in the way that he has been so busy up until now. But let's see what happens. It certainly, as I said, the style of Pascal Donoghue was very particular and he had a way of operating, you know.
We're now facing two by-elections, of course, not just one.
Curious. I mean, we were talking here about a by-election after Catherine Connolly, and then, you know, there could be other by-elections before the end of this government, and now we've got two already. So, and it's going to be very challenging for the government. I think there's no doubt about that.
And Hildegard Nocton finally making it to that full cabinet position, Fiacra.
Finally making it. And I was at the Oris actually with a couple of colleagues while she was receiving her her seal of office from Catherine Connolly. You know, she's finally now a full minister. Catherine Connolly in her first kind of formal role in that role, I think maybe doing it efficiently. There was no huge hug for fellow Galway woman.
It seemed very businesslike.
And also a businesslike, I think, is the phrase, Joe, for Catherine Connolly and Micheál Martin's interactions. Don't take matter too much to her, but in terms of how that those relations might go forward between government and the presidency, it was cordial. It was businesslike, but I don't think it was the warmest in the world.
And Helen McEntee, Joe, to Foreign Affairs and Defence. Of course, she's been junior Europe minister before, working very closely with Leo Varadkar at the time. And promotion for Frank Fian and Eimear Curry.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, for Helen McEntee, obviously she has to hit the ground running. She has hit the ground running in terms of the EU Foreign Affairs meeting today. She's dealing with the ongoing issue of Ukraine. Obviously, the war in Gaza, the ceasefire in Gaza has been sustained.
And we had a motion, didn't we, from People Before Profit this week?
Yes, in terms of the Occupied Territories Bill, and that's something that is immediately on her in tray as well. There's a big effort by the United Opposition to get the Occupied Territories Bill passed before Christmas and to get services included in it. Of course, we know the debate about that. It's been going on for a long, long time now. The government is saying that they can't get services included in it, even though they want to get services included in it. So, all of that she has to now deal with, and obviously the new super junior will now be sitting at cabinet as well. She won't have a vote there, but that's an expanded responsibility for her. And then of course Frank Feehan makes a return as junior minister as well.
There was some criticism as well for Helen McEntee in that Occupied Territories Bill motion on Wednesday. A number of opposition parties, they kept zoning in on her. They're saying, look, there's not a lot of people on the government benches, but they're saying, where's Helen McEntee on this, the most important one, for their view, one of the most important foreign affairs policies. Helen McEntee has flagged herself in
interviews.
This is during
the debate in the chamber.
Yeah, during debate, and they were saying, well, she's not here in the first piece. So I think you can see that government is certainly going to have to respond to maybe a targeting of Helen McEntee on those particular topics.
All right. And, of course, the other highlight of the week was Ivan Yates, the former Fine Gael minister turned podcaster, commentator and media trainer. His appearance...
Did you get any training before this podcast earlier?
I trained myself, babe. Actually, do you know
that's
who
that's what he said as well,
me?
Funny enough.
And it was donkeys years ago when RTE still had a training department back in the Stone Age. And there were this remarkable woman called Bridget Kilfeather. And it was like, she was like a head nun.
Right.
And so we were training for Prez at the time, and it was all like, oh my gosh, the training. It was like going to kind of boot camp or something.
That was
for
training
6 months.
And pronunciation and all of that.
Yes, and
indeed.
Saying RTE on Shoghuiv, and it's R, not OR. It's R.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, and if you got that wrong, Bridget Kilfeather would give out to you. But anyhow, fair play to her. So all eyes were on Ivan Yates. And actually, you know one thing that struck me, Joe? Because I was watching it remotely, so I was watching it on Eireachtas TV, and we had, I don't know, was it a debate or statements, but really, really powerful exchanges in the whole scoliosis debate. Then come 6:30 and Ivan Yates is appearing at the media committee, which is the popcorn story of the day. Of course, we switch over to that. And does that tell you something about... I don't know. It just felt wrong.
Well, yes, I know what you're getting at there. But at the back of the Ivan Yates discussion, though, there are very serious issues as well, which, you know, they were highlighted in the course of that debate. I mean, Ivan Yates was unapologetic when he went in there to the committee.
I think he kind of ran rings around them most of the time.
Well, he did. But at the same time, you know, the likes of Sinead Gibney was putting it to him that, you know, I don't know actually where you really are coming from when you're making your commentary, your public comments, because I don't know, have you trained the person who is opposing me in the general election? And it was that kind of, it was putting that to him, and obviously he was very clear that his position is that his commentary and what he does in his broadcasting is completely different from his training. He has
a
distinction
physio,
in his own head.
Isn't that the phrase?
He says he's the physio, not the Bonnish Thor. Yeah, he says he's the physio, not the Bonnish Thor. But, I mean, it just highlights the issue around the different way that podcasts are treated versus broadcasts in Ireland. There is no law really around podcasts for the most part, and there is around broadcasting. So a lot of issues, but serious issues behind that. essentially entertaining committee exchange.
Yeah, I think that committee really came down to, it was kind of like infotainment, and I would kind of lean towards yourself, Anya. Honest, Joe and I had the experience of watching it yesterday evening. Ivan Yates certainly seemed to come out on top of it, but there is still the core point that Ivan Yates was avoiding during that committee about, should someone who's going on air, who is mm-hmm. doing work of any kind for whatever else, at least acknowledge that at the start. And Sinead Gibney responded to Ivan Yates's claims that, look, he didn't tell Matt Cooper because he didn't want to put Matt in a difficult position, which is somewhat unusual claim, by saying that that kind of argument is absurd.
And what was also interesting as the questioning went on, because, you know, Ivan Yates was very clear that in the one day he could have Chinese walls between mm-hmm. his work as a broadcaster and, you know, and his training work. But on the other hand, even if that's absolutely the case, and even if there's a lack of regulation here and he's cooperating with Commission Nimyan, it may turn out, you know, nothing improper in terms of all of that happened. At the same time, given the emergence of AI deepfakes, mm-hmm. we're already seeing them, we saw them in the presidential campaign, given what we're watching happening in politics right across Europe and in the States, without regulation, how do you trust a bad actor not to kind of crash right through those Chinese walls and start manipulating the audience in a way that they're not clear about?
Mm. Well, that was actually what Ivan Ní Chuilín, the senator for Fine Gael, and obviously formerly in RTE's sports department, that's the point that she was making, saying that, look, regulation in this instance is needed. Ivan Yates was responding and saying, well, no, he disagrees completely. Regulation in this instance is bad. You need to have people able to express views and different perspectives. But I think Ivan was being slightly mischievous on this, because you're right. The point is that you have to have some rules and some balances when people are broadcasting, whether that's on TV or radio or podcasts or newspapers, so that the viewer and the person receiving the information knows if that's, some people might describe as a bad actor.
And these are the constraints we work on, clearly. And, and you know, they're fairly clear and set out for the audience. But at the same time, Ivan Yates himself pointing out, some of the most successful podcasts that people in Ireland listen to, they come from abroad. That if you start getting... So you're absolutely not able to regulate that. So, I mean, in the real world, would that really work? Yeah. Also, the whole point about podcasts is to offer something...
Different,
edgy. Alternative. Yeah. What was the phrase he said? It would be a mood killer. Yeah. And you would end up simply, if you sanitize the whole thing, you'd end up with no business programs. And what you'd end up with is journalists talking to journalists, and it would all be very dull and boring.
Yes, I mean, he says that he brings his personal integrity to it. And I'm sure he does, and there's no doubt about that. But it kind of reminds me of what has been done in terms of influencers and selling products online. Where before they were able to go online and say whatever they wanted about such a product and say it's been fabulous for my skin and don't I look just glowing
you
today.
You do, congratulations.
Thanks very much. I'll tell you the name of the product in a minute. But now they are being regulated and they have to say that this is a product placement and that there is a financial relationship as a result of that product placement. So it's a bit like that. And the point you just made there, and it's been made by lots, you know, podcasts, some of the most popular podcasts in Ireland are coming from the United States now. They're not coming from here. The rest is history. The rest is politics. Mm-hmm. The rest is politics USA.
The news agents.
Yes.
We could go on.
So, you know, none of them are going to be in any way amenable to Commission the Man or any regulation that we have in this country.
I would say, though, that Ivan is a clever fella, and I think he would also be aware of the fact that, look, if everything was completely regulated and completely fair, maybe there's less space for the likes of Ivan Yates to have their controversial opinion in the mix and all that.
He got the plug in for
the
book, though.
He got the plug several times. Several times, wasn't he, saying he didn't want to talk about the Jim Gavin experience, but he might do next year in whatever he might write.
Fiacra, last weekend on The Week in Politics, last Sunday on The Week in Politics, Ivana Bacik kind of surprised us with a reference to the court action a number of councillors and Frank MacDonald were bringing against Minister James Brown's new apartment housing standards, allowing for them to be smaller and not so many rules about perspective and balconies and so on. What happened there?
Yeah, so this came up, as you said, with yourself and Ivana Bacic on Sunday and the Week in Politics. So this goes back to the plan in, I think it was June or July of this year. So James Brown announced the plan that in basic terms meant slightly smaller apartments and less windows. So some people obviously had a slight disagreement with that. James Brown said, well, that's a chance to get them done quicker and or better value. So there was a case taken by, as I said, Frank MacDonald and a number of councillors, and that was in the High Court on Monday. And it basically surrounded the fact that the councillors are saying, well, you can't do that. You need to have, under EU rules, an environmental assessment of the impact of this. Government disagreed, and government says, look, it's still disagreeing with this, but in order to avoid getting wrapped up in red tape and legal action, they're going to have what they say is going to be the environmental assessment. They're going to push through with this. So why is this all important for anyone listening into this? Well, it means that those apartments and those potential homes are going to be slightly delayed again. So it's another delay for understandable arguments to government's housing plans.
You do always kind of wonder, though, like that delay, you know, would you prefer to have a roof over your head or with smaller windows in the walls? Or
I do like my windows.
A roof over your head with larger windows in a couple of years' time.
Another problem interesting that's conundrum, cropped up, isn't it? In the area of housing was being discussed today, and that was the new board and the people involved in the Peter McFerry Trust were in, Joe, weren't they?
Yes.
Talking about basically what went wrong there. And again, it's just all of this setback to an organisation that's providing housing and a key part of the whole housing provision thing, especially for those most in need.
Yeah, the Peter McFerry Trust has had a core role in providing housing for various different groups, ex-prisoners, various different groups in the country. They've had a key role. They have a huge footprint in Ireland. But a couple of years ago, the wheels started to come off the cart. So the Public Accounts Committee were looking at that today, and we heard from the former and short-lived CEO, whose name escapes me,
Francis
Doherty, first of all, and he was talking about how when he took over as CEO, he was told everything was rosy in the garden, that the finances were fine, but he quickly discovered that that wasn't the case, that in actual fact they had severe financial problems, that essentially they had been bidding and getting the running of services at a level, the bids were at a level that were below what it would cost them to actually run the services. And so they were in a net loss situation, and it continued to lose money. And he just outlined that nothing was as it seemed. And of course, we are well aware that as a result of that, there's been a huge attention brought onto the Peter McFerry Trust. There's a new board in place now. They're working to correct all of these things. A lot of these things they have corrected, I guess. But the name Peter McFerry Trust, Father Peter McFerry, of course, was after Sister Stan was the most famous campaigner on homeless and housing issues in the country. So it has all been very much tarnished. But I think it's kind of a case of it's too big to fail as well, because they have a couple of thousand employees and they have 2,000 people
more than
per
one,
night.
And more than 1,000 properties, Francis already was saying, and they also saying, I think, somewhere in the region of a €60 million annual budget. So when he took over it, and was in June to August 2023, so he was there when this information was being uncovered, that he said that he was told everything was hunky-dory, the place was in rude health, and it turns out that he said they didn't even have any cash reserves. They only had a couple of hundred euro in a sink fund, but they did have a couple of things on you that he brought up as well in exchange with Fianna Fáil TD Paul McAuliffe, one of them being a peacock enclosure. So there was money being spent on that, and he said that was absolutely indefensible.
Peacocks.
Peacock enclosure. So peacock as an actual.
Where was this?
This was in this.
Fascinating.
This was in a property.
Curtifstown.
Curtifstown house in County Kildare, which was a St Vincent de Paul property, and the Peter McFerry Trust had bought it, and there were a number of spending questions that Francis already had during this. One of them was an extending of, I think it was about €300,000 he said was spent on extending the driveway. Another was a peacock enclosure with two peacocks in it. Now, you're looking at me the same way that Paul McAuliffe was looking at Francis Doherty during the committee. Paul McAuliffe, the Fianna Fáil TD, said, have to ask the daft question, what on earth is a homeless charity in financial difficulty dealing with two peacocks in a peacock enclosure at a property like that? And Francis Doherty said, I agree with you, it is utterly indefensible.
And apparently they're no longer there now, isn't that
they're
right?
No longer there, yeah, the peacocks.
But they were there for a while, weren't they?
I hope they're okay. I hope those poor peacocks aren't homeless now and they found a good home for them.
There could be feathers in a hat somewhere at this stage. Exactly.
A couple of other things to note this week, I suppose. Sinn Féin, they're just relentless, aren't they, on the cost of living issues. They were pushing it again on people in arrears, on energy bills at leaders' questions this week. Mary Lou MacDonald again saying she doesn't need the economy mansplained to her and talking about the cost of living this week. So that's a constant drum from them. But also of interest, Fiacra, and there's a protest, a migrant workers' protest today, Thursday, about family reunification at the Dáil and wanting more of it, basically. But we've had Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan saying what's happening in the UK now, and there's a major crackdown going on over there on the length of time before you'd get, you know, the right to stay or citizenship or the entitlements you'd get, because they really are trying to crack down hard on immigration. And Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan saying, well, if they do that because of the open border, we're going to have to do that too. That could be one to watch.
Yeah, it is going to be one to watch. So Jim O'Callaghan, after Shabana Mahmood's announcements in the UK, he did release a statement, I think on Monday, where he said, look, that doesn't mean that Ireland is going to become a softer touch, I think was kind of the mood that he was kind of saying it. Now, no decisions have been made yet in Ireland, but there's definitely a mood music change from the government on this, that they will, I think, there's been some suggestions about being careful about how much money is provided in terms of supports, in terms of family reunification, these sort of matters. The fact that the UK has made the steps that it has made, and it is quite a severe crackdown from the UK, it will...
Well, it's right out of the reform playbook,
exactly. It is right out of the reform playbook, and the political machinations going on in the UK are a part of this. But it does mean that Northern Ireland and the claims that are constantly made that a number of people seeking asylum in Ireland go to the UK then go over the border with Northern Ireland to here. It does mean that is going to come into more focus both for Ireland and, it has to be said, for the EU as well.
Yeah, because the figure I think at the moment is that the most recent figure from the government was that over 80% of asylum seekers in Ireland are coming via Northern Ireland. So that is a fact it's a new scenario which hadn't been there in times past, but it is most definitely the case now. So there's obviously with the common travel area, no restrictions, jump on a train, jump on a bus, you're in another country, and you may claim asylum.
It should be pointed out as well that obviously the opposition will undoubtedly say in this that just because the UK is going in a particular direction, we do need to respond to it, but it doesn't mean we need to go in that direction.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how united the left opposition will be on that particular question.
Yes.
Push comes to shove, all right. The row of the week. The row of the week had to be Jennifer Whitmore and Danny Healy-Ray. This was, was it a debate or statements on Mercosur, wasn't
yes.
it? Yes. And so Jennifer Whitmore was saying, where is Michael Healy-Ray for this debate? And she said, will he roll over and accept Europe's say-so? And Danny Healy-Ray got quite irate and jumped to his feet, and he was going, here I am. And then he was up and down the steps and she was telling him to sit down. And and he also said, I will not be protecting the foxes either.
It was important drama, but perhaps slightly absurd drama of a quiet Tuesday evening just after Pascal Donoghue had maybe taken the energy out of the day and everyone was relaxed. That's exactly what happened. And Danny Healy-Ray did come in with an element of maybe Shakespearean drama to it. He said, I hear you've been looking for me. Here I am. And there was quite a bit of boisterous interaction between Jennifer Whitmore.
Yeah, shouting match.
You know, normally slightly reserved Jennifer Whitmore saying, you know, you're never here. You're trying to play to the farmers.
There was
genuine anger. And Danny Healy-Ray in response. One extra actor in it all, the, of course, always quiet and reserved and never causing a row himself, John McGuinness, was the last Cairn Coyle when this was all happening. And he was telling him to, you know, calm down, sit down, you know, behave yourselves. I think John McGuinness enjoying the irony of not being at the centre of the row.
Joe, I think it was the Dáil's answer to Christmas Panto, wasn't it?
Well, it certainly was. Jennifer Whitmore got very cross about it, and she was shouting at Deputy Healy-Ray to sit down and be quiet. It wasn't his time to speak. But of course, Danny Healy-Ray continued to speak because he felt very strongly on the matter. It all goes back, of course, to the Mercosur agreement, and that is something that the government are having to grapple grapple with now as
well. Yes, there's a big EU vote on that coming up.
There's
soon.
A big EU vote coming up on it, and the government have said they'll do their, they're doing their best to make sure it doesn't damage Irish farmers. But of course, Irish farmers, and even as late as today, we see that the Farmers Journal have a story about antibiotics been available freely in agriculture shops in South America for purchase by anybody who wants them, and all sorts of things about animal tags, etc., etc. But of course, the Mercosur agreement isn't just about beef.
No, there's, and the Commission's determined to drive it through on account of the potential trade benefits. Fiacra, I don't know where you're watching that rather good documentary about
Who was presenting that on you?
But did you notice our colleague Joe Magg looking very dapper?
Because it was just Joe popping up once or twice.
It made the documentary, I thought myself.
It made the documentary.
Michael D. Higgins was a footnote otherwise.
It was, honest to God, I enjoyed making that so much. It really was like reeling in the year for lefties. Mm. It was just like a trip back in time. And I have to pay huge tribute, by the way, to Tony Hudson, the editor on the programme, because that was the best TV editing of all that archive I have ever seen. And Jane Murphy, the producer, who was a dream to work with. So, and if you go back and check the RTE player, if you haven't had the chance to see it, you'll definitely see a very dapper looking Joe McGray look there.
Yeah, it was actually a really interesting look at the life of Michael D. Higgins, though, you know, going from his very early days where he tried, failed and tried again and eventually got himself elected, you know. And plus, what actually struck me about it last night as well, I was aware of his background and I was aware of, you know, the family background and all the rest of it, and how he went to County Clare with his brother to be raised by his aunt. But how that shaped his political outlook from his very early days was, I thought that really came across as well.
Yeah, that
you know.
Was the top of part two. I really loved that bit and how that did shape his political outlook.
People can judge themselves by looking at the player.
The more we looked at the archive, Fiacra, and again, you look back to the 70s, you know, the struggle in the background he came from. He was so, you know, left of the Labour Party, even though people were still believing the 70s would be socialist. When you look then at the 80s and the referendums and so on, nobody, if anyone then had told you, first of all, that he'd make cabinet. Secondly, that he'd make president. And not just president, but a dearly beloved president. Honest to God, you'd have been, you know, in the loony bin. Then nobody would have believed you. And what was really interesting to watch was the country kind of moved into his lane much more than he compromised. Now, he moved a bit to the centre. He did become a minister. But that, again, that's not something you often see in politics.
Well, yeah, and it's events as well. I mean, if you think back to that first election where he came through, you know, Sean Gallagher was that favourite right until the very last minute. I think you guys had that. The last opinion poll was he was on 40%. Michael D was on 23%. Then the famous debate took place and all that followed from that. So, you know, events dictate and events conspire. And that put him into Áras an Uachtaráin. And there's no doubt then that his time in Áras an Uachtaráin, I think he hugely, what's the correct word? He just became a sort of, everyone was fond of his presence for the most part while he was in Leinster, in Áras an Uachtaráin.
I do think it kind of, though, also underlines one sort of unwritten rules maybe of politics, that it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. It's about you develop over a period of time, you build up sometimes not good reputation, sometimes a good reputation, but you build up credibility over time. So maybe the Michael D. Higgins of his first ventures in might have said something and people would say, you know, he has a lot to learn. But when he's the elder statesman saying it, maybe people listen a bit more.
All right. Well, it's on the RTE player if you want to give yourself a little treat and take a trip down memory lane. Yes, just like Ivan Yates. No, not like that. All right. But you will see a very handsome looking younger Joe Magg.
If you insist on saying it, Anya, I can't disagree with you, I suppose.
Okay. Like, subscribe and follow and all that kind of stuff. And we'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.